great to have you with us. A big show. Lots of sporting activity across the weekend to discuss. And who better to have that conversation with than the great Adam White, who's shaking his hand feverishly. Whitey, good morning.
Good morning. I just spilt my tea.
Ah, no.
I had my notes, my papers. I'm just juggling everything coming in, talking as I walked in, and I have a paper cup. And you know what I did?
What'd you do?
I squeezed it a little bit hard.
What'd you do that for?
And it just sort of overflowed.
What'd you do that for?
I don't know.
That's an error.
I don't know. Anyway, I'm here. I'm enthusiastic. I'm ready to go.
Well, that's great news.
Have you seen the moon this morning?
I drove looking at the moon most of the way. I was on the road firmly, but I saw the moon most of my trip.
Strong illumination.
Yes. Yes. Almost like a bat torch. The Gotham City bat signal. Very strong.
Could have played footy out in the street without any problems at all.
Well, there might have been a few problems getting the numbers.
Yeah, that's true.
Might have been the numbers issue, but in terms of illumination, it might have been right. I was watching, Angels and Demons on Saturday night. The Illuminati.
Your normal late Saturday night movie type
caught.
Situation.
I got caught.
You're unbelievable.
I'm a bandit for the Robert Langdon. Who wrote those books? Da Vinci Code and...
No, no idea. No, I don't know.
Anyway, I'm a bandit for those. I quite like those stories that they tell. And Robert Langdon, or Tom Hanks as he's also known in real life, plays a good role as the professor, finding out all the bits and bobs. And that's the Illuminati. That's where I got to there, because the Illuminati were back in the game. Although they weren't really. It was brought by a young man who was looking for power. Anyway, a topic for another day. Speaking of young men looking for power, they're the ones that Adam Romanescu manages these days. And young women as well. A former Bombers champion, these days manager to the Stars. He's back in business with us on a Monday morning. Good morning, Rama.
Yes, good morning. Good morning.
I've sensed Rama's a bit off today.
Fatigue.
Bit of fatigue, not as friendly as normal. I think
what's happened to
there
MMA?
Might be a bit of an edge to Rama today.
Nah, no edge.
What's
no
happened? Edge. Talk to us. No. This is a safe space.
Some flatness.
It's a safe space.
A little bit of grumpiness.
No, not grumpy.
It's a safe space. Let us know.
I'm a little bit sad on Andrew Simons, to be honest with you. Just reading all the tributes to him over the yesterday and now this morning, and he's he would seem like a person you want to hang around with and be a teammate of.
Well, seemingly, yeah. All the feedback in the last 24 hours or so is absolutely that.
Yeah.
He's the guy that you'd entrust with your life if you needed to. Once he was with you, he'd never leave you.
Yeah.
That's seemingly the feedback we're getting. And you can almost see that through his commentary, just by the way. Mm. And the rapport that he had with his co-commentators and the way he told the stories and the way he analysed it was pretty straight up and down the line. There wasn't too much fluffing about with Andrew Simons. So all the reports are, and the people that I know that knew him said that he was just the life of the party and the guy that you want to have a beer with and to go fishing with and just hang out with, because he was a great guy. It was very, very sad news. I was actually with Whitey, and we were discussing it, and Whitey didn't know he's at junior footy, and I said, what about Andrew Simons? What are you talking about? Died in a car crash. What? And then the story went from there. But it was a horribly sad day, and just piles on the world of pain for cricket in the last year or so, I suppose.
Well, I think the thing about it is, it's sort of what Rama touched on a little bit, is you start to get to know the players better once they finish playing when they're in the commentary box. Mm. And particularly through that really successful era that Shane Warne and Andrew Simons were in, we all knew them as cricketers, but we didn't necessarily know them as people. But when they're in the commentary box and you're sharing stories, as they did, showing their personalities, you got to know them a lot better. And I think a lot of people got, not Andrew Simons wrong, but you got to better appreciate why he was so popular with his teammates, because he was so such a loyal man, straight down the line, but had a good sense of humour. He was a teammate you wanted to have, you know, with you. And there was a lot of controversy with Andrew Simons when he first came onto the scene, because at one point he almost played for England because he didn't think he'd actually get to play for Australia. Then he did get a chance to play for Australia, and he underperformed early in his career, whether it be short-form cricket or even in a test match situation. He was averaging under 20 for quite a while when he first started his career, but they persisted with him. And in the end, after 27 test matches, he averaged over 40. Now, that's as a number six. Now you'd almost take 40 as a number four, such as the way test cricket is these days. And in a lot of ways, he was ahead of his time because he was such an aggressive player, such a brilliant field because he was such a brilliant athlete. You can imagine how much money he would have made if he was born just 10 years later to be able to fully profit out of T20 cricket. But as I said, he was someone who was ahead of his time. I mean, in England, he just destroyed attacks when he played county cricket. And, you know, all the short-form cricket that they used to play over there as well, because their major one-day cricket was actually 40 overs back, you know, 20-odd years ago. So, yeah, I mean, that's two from the Fox cricket team just this year. And two of the most popular members of their team. So they'd be doing it really tough. But... yeah, it's extraordinary.
He was one of the most unique talents.
He was.
That Australian cricket's ever had.
Because you think, Rammer, of, say, Colin Miller, someone that could bowl medium pace and spin, and even Mark Waugh did that when he had his back issues, but so did Andrew Symonds. There was kind of nothing Andrew Symonds couldn't do. And it gave Australia the opportunity to play both Shane Watson and Andrew Symonds in the same team as Watson as a top order batsman. So had so much versatility at some point, but just the fact that he was the number six that could bowl, even if Shane Watson wasn't in the team, he gave them so much versatility. And he was probably the first player, maybe outside Ponting, but probably as that three-dimensional player that you always get picked, not for his fielding, but it was a line ball call, he'd play because of what he could bring to the team, not just with the bat or the ball.
Yep. Yeah, a special talent and seemingly a pretty special human. We'll talk to John Buchanan a little bit later on in the morning. He's coached at state level and, of course, national level as well. He had some great moments through the journey. He took out the streaker and the... was it the Gabba?
Yeah.
His century at the MCG was something I'll never forget.
I reckon
that was probably the moment that he announced himself, I reckon.
Yeah, no doubt. That was when he was... So he's averaging 17 with the bat that day when he went out to bat.
Yeah, right.
That 140-odd that he made in the World Cup 2003.
Final. Yeah, so that was the most significant innings from the point of view of... That was the World Cup where Shane Warne was sent home. And
Symonds came in.
And
that day,
he made the 140-odd, and then he got a 90-odd in the semi-final against Sri Lanka as well. So he performed in big moments, despite the way he played, because often in cricket you think of big moments, got to get your head down and sort of, you know, grind it out. He was someone that sort of, it was that sort of, you know, he just went attack mode. But, that 100 half you're talking about at the MCG, he came in with the team in trouble, and he and Matthew Hayden put on an extraordinary partnership. So I think they were 450 or something when he came into bat. May have even been 550.
You love it too. Well, he hit a six to bring up his first
test
century.
And was up and about too, yeah.
Usually just try knocking around up. I'm going for it.
Was up
all the glory I want.
Yeah, horribly sad news when that was broken news today. For the passing of Andrew Symonds. We'll chat later on in the morning about that with John Buchanan, as I mentioned. So more on that through the show. Great news for us, though, because Steve-O's in Steve-O form.
Already?
I asked the question before, who wrote the Da Vinci Code books. Steve-O, very, very quickly onto the screen. John Grisham, the author of Da Vinci Code, Jade Grisham's uncle. Now...
I don't believe that's
correct. I don't think he's the uncle of Jade Grisham.
Dan Brown, isn't it?
It's Dan Brown, yeah. So it's real Steve-O areas to start the week. He has been. And look at him. He's like the clown at the show with his mouth open as if to say, how could that possibly be right? It is Dan Brown who wrote those books out of hand. He's hot to trot early doors. Hot to trot. So that's a good start to the week. The only other way we can get better start to the week is to have a chat to John on the road after an Essendon loss.
Oh.
And John is on the road, and he's on the line, and he wants to join us. Hello, John. John.
Hello.
You got us?
Yeah.
Yeah, you're right.
You're a bit disappointed if you're Liam Shields, you know? Dylan Shields.
Dylan.
Looks shocking, mate, and Merritt getting knocked to the ground. Do you reckon Reece Jones will let that get away with it, mate? Or just weak, mate? Never met such a weak side. I'm so disappointed. And I think Runts would stand down. Stop making excuses, mate. You're obviously not playing for you. But that's the worst I've ever seen the Bombers play. Weak, no retaliation. Could have just bumped him in the side, Parker. Parker was laughing at him. You might as well go back to EDS, Dylan Shields. And that's a Lang Warren boy, Parker is. And he just laughed at him. I can't believe. Got no gumption. Don't you feel disappointed? What do you reckon, boys?
Come on, Rammer.
Come on, Rammer.
No. When it's after 7 o'clock.
No, you're allowed to give John something. He's made the effort to call in. You've got to give him something.
Look, just a bitterly disappointing night, John. I don't think it can be explained any other way.
Depends who you are, I suppose.
What are you laughing about, Whitey?
He's off,
that was quite funny.
Who do you barrack for this week?
That's pretty good.
Whoever I want to barrack for.
Yeah, correct.
He's a broken-hearted man, he is. Broken-hearted.
I break for Fitzroy.
He breaks for football. He breaks for good football is what he breaks for. Ultra disappointing, but first quarter in particular, Remo, which we'll touch on later on with Jim, but the game was over. It's all over. It's all over in the first quarter.
It's probably all over before they walked out.
Is there some heat coming?
On
the coaching staff?
9 games ago, they're playing in a final.
I'm just asking a question.
That's all I'm saying. 9 games ago, they're playing.
I'm not looking for any headlines. I'm just asking you a question.
A coach can't go out there and make a team tackle and apply pressure. That's a want. That's an effort. That's an ability to try help your teammates and do that. A coach can't go out and do that.
No, they cannot.
So Essendon had 30 tackles for the game. Callum Mills had 13.
What are you smiling at?
I didn't know that stat. And I think that's interesting.
I'm laughing at that. I'm laughing at that as well, because that's just unacceptable.
On the SCG.
On the SCG. And, you know, like, it's one of those things that I don't think Essendon is a tough team. I don't think Essendon...
That's no doubt. Well,
that's pretty apparent. That's a really simplistic thing to say. Oh, they're not tough. That's like saying man up and all that sort of stuff when you're yelling it out from the sidelines. Yeah. But they don't have a ruthlessness. They're not an aggressive team. But last year, they would tackle. And there was a game against Sydney early in the year. They didn't win. But they made Sydney earn that victory. And they were praised for their desperation and their intensity. Yeah. So to say that they don't have the players that can do it, they do have the players that can do it because they did it last year. They're just choosing not to do it.
How many tackles do you think Essendon averaged for the year per game?
That low 40s?
43.
I would say.
43. I think the AFL average is about 56, 57.
Yeah, it's a very interesting stat. And it's the lowest in the competition. The Tigers are second worst in terms of total number.
But they tackled on the weekend. 46.1. And they get the result.
So what's the more relevant stat? I'm interested in this conversation actually. Mm-hmm. Is it the total number of tackles, or is it the tackle against your opponent averages? You see the plus or minus per opponent, like every week, because it's 43 or whatever it is for the Bombers.
Yeah.
In terms of plus or minus tackles against their opponent per game. They're minus 3 per game. They average 3 less tackles than their opponents per game.
And I think that's a very important stat because it's the way you play.
Correct. And that leads into your style of footy. All right. So clearly, that would suggest, now I don't know this, I'm going to have a quick look and see if I can find the stat. It would suggest that contested footy isn't a big element of Essendon's game. Because if contested ball is a big element of your game, more often than you're going to have bodies around the contest, you're going to get a lot of tackles up. So it's a style issue as much as anything else, I reckon.
And that's exactly right. And I think that's a bigger issue for Essendon. It's the way they play versus, you know, taking out a statistic that looks horrendous. And it was horrendous on Saturday night, let's be honest. But it's the game style. It's the lack of accountability. It's the lack of two-way running. It's those sorts of things that are you know, really important to winning games of football on a consistent basis.
There's one passage of play.
There we go. So they average the second least amount of contested possessions per game behind only the Eagles.
Mm-hmm.
And that's just from an average perspective and against their opponents.
They're nice to play against. They're easy to play against. It's, you know,
they're minus 10 against their opponents every
it's
week.
It's bruise-free football that they want to play. There's a passage of play, Whitey, I think in the third quarter, where it goes inside Sydney's 40. They drop the mark, ball spills out. There was a chance to lay a tackle, I reckon, 7 or 8 times.
Oh, yeah.
Haywood fumbles, and I think Papley ends up kicking the goal.
Yeah.
That passage of play should be on repeat in the hangar the whole week.
Yeah, but they've been like that before.
But it should.
And it changes for a week, and then it goes back.
There comes a point within a team's life cycle where you have to embarrass the individual to get a response out of that. Now, I don't say that because to be harsh on people, but sometimes players don't realise what they're doing until they actually see it. Now, again, you know, in the way back time machine that Jimmy talks about when we played, on a Monday, sometimes you used to fear going into the football club for what Mark Harvey or Kevin Sheedy or Robert Shaw would show on the screen. And it's done in front of a whole playing group. So sometimes that needs to happen so players can go, ooh, I really did that.
Yeah, that's right. But as I said, they've been there before this year. Now, that's alongside Geelong in round one. That was as bad as they've been.
That was worse than Geelong.
Because they got whacked in the media after the Bulldogs game. And I actually didn't think they were horrendous that day. They were just beaten by a better team. Whereas Saturday night was disgraceful. I mean, you know, Dyson Heppel's 200th game off the back of the win against Hawthorn, which I thought, and we talked about this last week, I thought it was overblown how good it was. Hawthorn just ran out of steam and just lost complete control of the game, and as Hawthorn tends to do. Yeah, so, I think they're in an interesting space, Essendon.
So is there more, if this continues, this going back to my original question, without trying to, I'm not looking for headlines or anything here, I'm asking a genuine question. If this continues, is there now an increased sense of urgency or intensity around the conversation of who suits and what suits the Bombers in terms of a coaching perspective, with James Hurd clearly back in the focus now with the Leon Cameron situation? Alistair Clarkson, we know, is in focus. Does there become a bit more urgency and intensity than perhaps normal because of what's happening around them in other clubs?
Look, I don't think there should, because like I said, 9 games ago, Essendon and Ben Rutten are playing in a final series. That's my opinion. I think sometimes it's very easy just to change coach.
Yeah, I'm with you. I'm a coach's man, just by the way.
Just change the coach. Change the coach. Get rid of the coach. It'll all change. It'll all change if you change the coach. That's there's so many times where that's proven completely incorrect. So I think it's got to fall back on the players and what they want to do and what they want to get out of the season and what some of them want to get out of their career.
I think, Daniel, under normal circumstances, it wouldn't be spoken about at the moment, because Ben is only into his second year as senior coach.
Yeah.
So, you know, it would be incredibly unfair for them to move on Ben Rutten now or at the end of the year based on the fact that they backed him in. They've given him a new coaching structure. So the answer should be a categoric no.
Yes.
But it is not a normal set of circumstances, because Alistair Clarkson is available and he's come out in the last 7 days and said he wants to coach. So it's the first thing. So it's not normal. And the second thing is that as Essendon is such a powerful... Sorry, I'm going to say this again. Essendon was such a powerful club. It has so many members. And they're seeing everyone else have success except themselves.
Mm.
So that creates an agitation as well.
Yes.
We're seeing Carlton at the moment, their old foes, get it together. And they play a tough brand of football. We're talking about tough. You know, they smash up teams as they did the Giants yesterday. They've seen teams or clubs like the Bulldogs and Melbourne win premierships in recent years where Essendon can't win a final in 20 years. And then they go and see St Kilda seem to get it together with a push towards top four, whereas Essendon are back languishing in the bottom, and they're so far behind most teams in the competition, that will get people agitated.
Carlton's turnaround is quite remarkable. Look at just how tough they are. Like contested possession, if you just use that as a
yeah.
Stat. Last year, they would average minus seven against their opponents per game. Michael Voss has come in this year, and now they are second on that tally with averaging plus 15. Melbourne's the only team with plus 16, better than them in the competition. Amazing turnaround.
Was it plus 37 or plus 40 yesterday in contested possession?
35 or 6
just completely
yeah.
batched them up.
Smacked them to bits. It's an interesting conversation. We will continue it through the morning. Jimmy Bartel will join us after 7 o'clock. The early mail, by the way, we didn't mention that before. We're at Ballarat today on the synthetic. We're on the plastic, the synthetic to wax the poly.
Oh, here we go.
We're into the poly season. It's got to go on to be all over this sort of stuff. 27 past 6. So you're welcome to join us through the morning if you like. 1-300-652-927 or 0416-90-5052 via the SMS Monday morning on The Breakfast. Great to have the Thuis with us Monday morning, 29 past 6. Ramo with us to go through the weekend of sport. There's been plenty of action across the weekend. Whitey, tell me what happened in the EPL overnight, because there was some drama.
Yeah, there has been some drama.
There was drama.
Yeah, there was absolutely. Which are you talking about, Man City?
I'm talking about Man City. Yeah. Man City were playing West Ham, and at halftime, it was 2-0 to the Hammers.
It was.
Which could have been all sorts of disaster. For our friends at City.
Yeah. So they've ended up getting 2-2. So they are 4 points in front of Liverpool, but Liverpool have a game in hand. So the thing is, if they had lost, because of goal difference, Liverpool has a -7 goal difference versus Man City. But still, to come back and find a way to get at least 1 point against West Ham was important for Manchester City. There are other really important games at the other end of the table as well. So I'll just go through them all.
Because Liverpool's got a game in hand.
Yeah, they got Southampton Wolves to play.
So yeah. Southampton are 15th on the 20-team table, and we're Wolves. They're 8th.
Yeah.
So, and who has City got, Rama?
City in have last game? Villa.
Villa, and where are they? They're mid-table 13th, so they should be winning that too. But if we saw anything from West Ham, they'll put it under a bit of pressure. So it's going to be a dramatic last day, you would think.
Yes. So the results from last night, Tottenham defeated Burnley 1-0, and we're very lucky, to be perfectly honest. So that had effect on the top four as well, because Tottenham's now gone ahead of Arsenal by 2 points, but Arsenal has a game in hand. Tottenham now only one left. Arsenal's got two left. But Burnley not getting a point is a bit of an issue, because Leeds got a point at home to Brighton. It was 1-1 there. Aston Villa 1-1 with Crystal Palace.
But Everton did it.
Yes. So Watford got belted 1-5 against Leicester. We talked about the 2-2 draw between West Ham and Man City. Wolves 1-1 with Norwich. And then the late one was Everton 2, Brentford 3. So when we look at the bottom of the table, Norwich and Watford are gone. So Burnley in 18th spot on 34 points, Leeds on 17 points, 35 points, and Everton in 16th position with 36 points.
So Burnley and Everton have a game in hand.
Correct.
Yes.
So, it is worth so much money to those clubs to remain.
And Everton just doesn't go down. No. So, but they put themselves back in a vulnerable position against Brentford. So, you know, they would have thought they'd at least get a point, even though Brentford's in 11th position and with all to play for. That was a bit of a disappointing result. So, yeah, it's very exciting.
Drama. Drama in the EPL. A drama in the AFL too. Big Dog's on the line. He's not happy with something. Dog, good morning to you.
Morning, lads. How are we?
We're well. What's doing?
The Bombers.
Oh, no.
I'm absolutely shattered. Like, effort and want to play the game, and the lack of, and Dyson just wants to laugh it off. Seriously, they've got to move Rutten on. He can't coach. They got to the finals last year on sheer luck, and they got smacked in the final. Get rid of him, get Clarkson, get a defensive edge, harden up, and become men. They're boys. It's a joke.
Thank you, Dog. Strong work from you on a Monday morning.
See, I think that's their biggest challenge, is what? That they don't have a lot of on-field leadership. And
that's been apparent for a number of years.
That's right, and they haven't chosen to fix it. What I mean by that is, if you look at what Brisbane did, they brought in Luke Hodge. You look at what Melbourne did. They brought in Jordan Lewis. Now, they weren't brought in to be the best players in the world because their best was past them. But it was to set standards on the field, and it was to set standards off the field.
Didn't they do that with Brendan Goddard at the Bombers?
It's a while ago now.
Yeah.
But yes, they did. But
Hodgie would have been a similar timeline, wouldn't it?
Yeah, but Brendan was there long enough that he was there as the sort of the one of the star players.
Yeah, but he played,
but one of the reasons was it to be that leadership on field.
He played in that little period where supplements they lost the year.
Yeah,
the,
yeah,
he was players out. So,
but he wasn't brought in for the purpose of a Jordan Lewis, a Luke Hodge, a Grant Birchall type. And what I mean is premiership experience. To be able to say to a young group of talented players, which is what I believe Essendon is, a young group of talented players, relatively speaking, is to be able to say to them, this is what you need to go and do. Do it this way because I did it this way. I did it this way at my former club and it was the premiership way. It was the successful way. These are the standards you've got to actually reach in your preparation and these are the things you've got to do on the field. And Essendon don't have those players on the list. And so, as hard as Dyson Heppel tries, does he know what success looks like?
Well, premiership success, no.
Or does he know what sustained success looks like?
No, but I think,
and I know that sometimes
and
easy
I get your,
to say
I get
that,
your yeah. point, but I think there's levels of there's different ways to get sustained success.
Yeah.
So the blueprint from one is not necessarily the blueprint from another.
I do understand it, and Richmond found a way to do it without needing to do those sorts of things. But I think it's helpful when you're looking at a team now or a club now that haven't had success in 20 years, longer, that they've got to think outside the box a little bit.
Yes, it's certainly getting a lot of people talking in footy at the moment. The focus, the blowtorch, firmly and squarely on the Bombers after their performance against the Swans, who were very, very good. That first quarter itself was scintillating. The big bud in form was nice to see.
Jeez.
But they've been enigmatic this year, the Swannies, but they were hot to
try. Maybe Essendon need to get Buddy. He's free agent. He always smacks us.
Dustin to Sydney and Franklin to Essendon.
I'm okay with that.
Anyway,
there you go.
Hey, you know what happened overnight as well?
What happened overnight?
I was up like quite late last night because Andy Sullivan put on one great show at 100-1.
What did he do?
Well, he finished in the top 10, but at one point he got within one of the lead.
Did he?
And I was getting quite excited, I must say. A double bogey didn't help at one point.
Unsettling.
But he was there at about. So I thought we had a good run for our money at 100-1. Tied for ninth in the end.
Right.
Sort of was a bit average on the back nine. But yeah, he sort of had my heart pumping there at one point.
Who won the title?
The title was won by Sam Horsfield. Now, this was a little bit of a surprise, I must confess, because.
Never heard of Sam.
Yeah, he's a bit of a gentleman. He's won a couple of times, but. It looked like it was Ryan Fox's for the taking. He got three or four in front at one point and was. He just looked a much better player than everyone else in the field. But he got a bit erratic on the back nine, and in the end, it was a two-shot win to Horsfield. So, finished at 13 under. So, poor old Andy, six behind, but still top 10.
Do we back him top 10?
No.
No, of course not. No, we're happy with the hundreds at the straight out situation.
Correct.
Setback for Andy fans. In the USPGA Tour, we're at the Byron Nelson in Texas. Now, Jordan Spieth always plays well in Texas, a hometown lad. What's the situation in the USPGA Tour, please?
Well, the leader at the moment is KH Lee. I must confess, I don't know too much about KH's work, but he's 25 under.
That's a lot.
He's 8 under for his final round, and he's only played 13 holes. He's 2 clear of Xander Schauffele, who's in the clubhouse at 23 under. He shot 11 under, so a 61 in his final round. At the moment, all the sort of the chasing pack, there's quite a few at sort of 23, 22 under, have got about 5 or 6 holes to play. So they're actually getting through this a bit earlier than what would normally be the case on the PGA Tour. So Spieth is only 2 off the lead. Matsuyama's 3 off the lead, but he's only got 1 to play. Schwartzel's 22 under. Ryan Palmer, 22 under. and Justin Thomas 21 under. So it's fair to say they're going low this week.
They're going very low.
The week before the PGA. PGA next week.
61, final round 61 is a very good effort.
Mm.
Well done to Xander Schauffele. In the ladies' PGA Tour, Minji Lee has taken out the Cognizant Founders Cup in Clifton, New Jersey by 2 strokes. 19 under was her final tally. Lexi Thompson was in second position on 17 under. Angel Yin, 16 under with Magdalene Sagstrom from Sweden. So another win for Minji Lee, which is fantastic news in the LPGA Tour. So well done. It's been a good weekend for her in the Cognizant Founders Cup. Well done.
Yes, very much so.
To Minji Lee. Now, in the world of tennis, so the Italian Open, we saw... who do we see? Rafa went down to...
He got injured again.
Oh, did he?
Yeah, we're surprised by that. But got injured again when he got beaten. So Novak Djokovic has won the Italian Open. So the French Open's a couple of weeks away, 1 week away, 2 weeks away, one of those two. The interesting thing from my perspective is the women's side of things, because since Ash Barty retired, Iga Swiatek became the number one player in the world.
Hasn't lost.
And she's now won 25 matches in a row and hasn't lost pretty much since Ash Barty retired.
She's got a pep in her step.
She's got a pep in her step. So maybe Ash knew that Iga might be a bit too good for me. I might just stop now. I'm not sure. But that's a pretty impressive effort, because in the women's game, it really is unpredictable at the top. We've talked about this a lot. You all right there, Rama?
I just did a loud sneeze.
It was unbelievable.
Sort of collapsed.
Sort of trying to say pineapple in my head, but didn't work that time.
Yeah, so it's been sort of, you know, chopping and changing at the top for a while, outside of Ash, who'd been number one for quite some time. But
yep.
Swiatek's got this great run going now, probably going into the French. I don't think she'll play this week.
What's happening in the NBA?
We're deep into the second quarter. It's 40-42 in Boston's favour.
Game 7.
Giannis has got 17.
Tatum's got 17.
So it's a bit of a shootout with those two at the moment.
They're both in the bonus. 2 minutes to go in the second.
Yeah.
42-40 in favour of the home team, the Boston Celtics, in this Game 7 in what's been a great series. Between the Bucks and the Celtics.
Geez, it'd be an interesting atmosphere in Boston. Fair to say they're very passionate supporters.
I've come across that. And now Steve A is going to join us after the break with some news. Just on the golf thing, did you see the Wayne Grady post on the weekend on Facebook?
Yes, it's fair to say that Wayne got quite aggressive.
I have two comments, says Wayne. Will you stop referring to it as the PGA? It's the PGA Tour. Secondly, from someone who's known Greg for 50 years, Greg is only about Greg. Been trying to take down the tour for 30 years. The admiration I had for him for what he has achieved and what he did for Australian golf is gone. For him to try and trivialise what the greats before him did to grow and create what the PGA Tour is today is an absolute disgrace. You should hang your head in shame, Shark. I went to Jack Newton's memorial service yesterday and was surrounded by true professional golfers who believe in loyalty and history. GFY, Shark. Who reckon GFY stands for, remember? Don't answer that question! Don't answer the question. Go forth, you shark. I think what it stands for, I think.
That's reasonably aggressive.
Fairly stern
and
strong from Wayne Grady.
Wayne Grady needs to go in the Bombers change rooms.
Yes. Because if Greg Norman went in there, he goes, we've all made mistakes. Yeah. It's okay, boys.
An interesting comment.
Greg's out of man. Since your dancing feet are always on my couch, the thing I could for us, we'd start to death. Ain't that a shame? What have you done for me lately? Ooh, yeah. That's what we asked Steve. What did we say, Janet? That's exactly right. What have you done for me lately? That's what we say. Yeah. Mark Stevens has joined us in the studio. Good morning, Steve-O.
G'day, Half.
Do you know who sings that?
Janet Jackson.
Very good. Not Dan Brown or John Grisham.
But when you say that, you're inferring about other movies. So I think that Dan Brown's only had the one movie. So I thought you were talking about a series of
Da Vinci
John
Code,
Grishams.
Inferno, Angels and Demons, all the books he's got have been made in the movies. And they're very good books, but they're very good movies as well. We digress, because Janet's having a birthday today. Now, you may or may not have come across Janet through the journey. She's been around. Mm. You know, brother did a few things. A couple of siblings have got involved too at times. She was born. What about this? What a way to be born, or where to be born. Gary, Indiana.
With one R or two R's?
With one R. She was born in Gary. Right.
Gary.
It's one of the great cities. It's a place in South Australia called Keith.
Keith, yeah. So. It's next to another one. What's it next to? There's another name sort of town. Somebody will tell me off the SMS. Being born in Gary. Where were you born, Gary? No, where were you born? Gary.
Gary.
What do you mean? No, where were you born? I was born in Gary. Indiana a few years ago. American singer, youngest of the famous Jackson family. Of course, Michael being the poster boy for that. Had a lot of hits through her time. There's a big long list of songs here. Of course, famous for a Super Bowl performance with Justin Timberlake as well.
Yes.
It caused a stir at the time.
Whose fault was that, do you think?
It was set up.
Set up? 100%.
It was PR 101, that is.
No, she's still carrying it. I saw a doco recently where she's still upset about it.
PR 101, that was.
She made a fortune out.
Real Kardashian sort of areas from her on that occasion. Now, Janet's having a birthday today. I'd like to know, Rama, how old is Janet Jackson, please?
Janet would be 55.
Yep, time's getting on. I think I remember in Different Strokes. She was good at she was fantastic too. In that. I'm saying 52.
No, I've got a feel for this one. I'm going with 57.
57. There are two of you in the window. One of you, closest without going over, is Adam Romanowska. She's 56.
Oh. Wow.
Today is Janet Jackson. Happy birthday to Janet. Other birthdays today. Pierce Brosnan's having a birthday today. He's 69. Deborah Winger, US actress, is 67 today. Gabriella Sabatini is having a birthday today. She was a poster girl for tennis for a little while there. She's 52 today, Gabby.
One-handed backhand.
She did. It was a big wind-up for her one-handed backhand, too. She had to get there early. That's why she never got any good on grass, although she won at Wimbledon. Tori Spelling, 49 today of Beverly Hills 90210 fame. Who else have we got? Megan Fox.
Got her trading card.
What?
Got her trading card.
Oh, you
her dad ran the show, didn't he?
Yeah, he did. Aaron.
Yes,
Aaron. Yeah, Rama knows all about it.
Well, he got the trading cards. Yeah. We spoke about this on
there. Ever seen the house Friday. That they lived in as kids?
It was Bel Air style.
It was a suburb.
And Liberace, thoughts and prayers to Liberace. He was born on this day in 1919. He passed away about 35 years ago now.
What did he do?
Liberace.
Yeah.
You serious?
You can't be serious.
No, I'm not sure. I thought he was like a painter from the 1700s.
Mm. Old Twinkle Fingers.
Are you serious?
No, I'm not. I am actually. that'll disappoint many people. My family.
He was an American pianist.
Right.
And entertainer.
Right.
He was big business, our man Liberace.
Mm.
Very big business. Steve, your big business around these parts. What do you got for us?
Well, there's plenty going on in footy half at the moment. Let's start with some injuries. Jack Steele, that's a blow, isn't it? AC joint ruptured, basically. Surgery, 6 to 8 weeks.
Really tough he was. He was tough.
It's a big effort for him to come back on the field.
He was unbelievable. Yeah. And not trying to avoid contact.
I was
he was
just
throwing
about to say
himself
exactly
in
that.
He was fantastic.
Yeah, he had plenty of the footy, particularly in that third quarter. He was laying tackles, he was absorbing tackles. That was incredible.
So I think it's one of those injuries, the half that you can't do much more damage once it's gone.
Still hurts, though.
Oh, it's a fair effort. And, so that's a blow. Is he the most important player at St Kilda? I don't believe so. I think Rowan Marshall is the real barometer there, and Gresham, sensational.
I would have thought Paddy
Ryder.
It
might be Paddy Ryder.
Paddy Ryder creates a domino effect in the sense that everyone else is better when he's there.
That's why he's the most important.
Mm.
Great money ball selection by St Kilda, that one.
Paddy?
Yep. Sort of quietly came across. There wasn't a lot of fanfare, was there, after he left Port?
No, that's true. That's true. No, he was outstanding on Saturday night. And I'm with Rammer. I think he's the most important player in their team.
Wow.
But Jack Steele is the best player. He's the best. But he won't be there for a little while now, so I'll have to find a way around that. But they were awesome on Saturday night. We'll have a chat about that with Jim after 7.
Zach Williams is the other one. Now, interesting, it's one of those ones where a player goes down near nobody, just running along. So it looks every bit a ruptured Achilles, anybody who's seen that before. So if that's a ruptured Achilles, it's basically worse than an ACL to recover from. You need surgery, of course, and, you know, 9 to 12 months. His only hope is, and late last night I was saying it could be a calf.
Well, that'd be much better.
That'd be much better. And my...
No.
And I look back and I remembered an incident where John Patton, it was a couple of years ago at Hawthorn, was running out to the wing. Same thing happened.
That's right, yeah.
He went down as if he was shot and everyone thought, oh, he's finished. He was in tears on the boundary and then that's he had the scan and he actually only had a calf and missed 4 weeks. So fingers crossed for Zach Williams, but you'd think that's an Achilles half. It didn't look great.
Well, one of the problems is that he's had issues with it over the last few weeks, hasn't he?
Yep.
So yeah, that's why.
And Jack Gunston's a sleeper injury too. We haven't heard the full extent of that. He landed awkwardly.
Yeah. Right on the siren.
He came back. Well, the siren had went, but he was sort of in the air.
Have you got an update, Rammer, on that one?
Well, he came back on for a little bit, but...
Yeah, it was pretty evident early. It was not going to be the
same. It looks a little bit like a foot region as well.
Now, well, Liz Frank.
Yes. I was watching the game with a doctor.
Are you saying Liz Frank?
Auntie Liz. I was watching the game with a doctor and he said that looked like a Liz Frank, which can be, so that's a watching brief there. That's a sort of injury, you know where that originated? Soldiers got their foot caught in the stirrup at war and then they got flown off the horse and their foot gets caught in the stirrup and the foot sort of buckles. Also happens to motorcyclists when they come off their bike. So it's a serious injury. So just waiting. It looked more like a foot injury to me. And as I said, I was with a leading doctor. Who said that's a Liz. So we'll wait and see.
Right, well, that'd be
what
no
are you
good.
Doing with a doctor on a Saturday?
I'm just having a quiet beer with a doctor watching the races at that stage, watching the last leg of the quarter.
What constitutes a leading doctor?
A leading doctor who is involved in AFL football at the moment at the coalface. And
Zimmer.
Clubland.
Zimmer.
Not Zimmer.
It's Zimmer.
No,
for
it wasn't
sure.
Zimmer.
100% Zimmer.
No, very close to the
1,000% it is Zimmer.
No, it's not Zimmer.
It's Zimmer.
No. And
what other doctors would you know in Clubland?
You'd be surprised.
Zimmer.
You'd be surprised.
100% Zimmer.
Zimmer. So
text come through Dr. Turf.
Keep your eye out for Liz. And you picked it, Liz Frank, didn't you?
Well, no, I didn't. I'm all these like Liz Frank, syndesmosis, they were never around when we played half. It was just a rolled ankle, wasn't
That's
it?
That's right.
Yeah.
We just got on with it.
You got to get on with it.
Plantar fasciitis, fasciitis.
Well, that's a different sort of injury, but yeah.
It's under your foot.
That's a bad one as well. Now, the MRO's interesting. Pickett copped the one match. I think he was lucky to only get one. He's gone past the ball, clipped him high with a shoulder. You know, the impact was enough to give Moore a bit of a whack. Again, I think these one-week suspensions are a bit low if we're setting the tone.
Was Tom Lynch lucky?
Yeah, he was lucky.
Had to be close to lucky.
That was a reflex action, I know, but it was hard. It was one of those accidentally on-purpose things.
You can't be using your forearm to club people in the head.
Yeah, but I don't know. But he sort of picked up the ball and he came up to protect himself, and just by the time he got totally up, Jarman Impey's face happened to be there.
If that was Toby Green, would have Toby Green been suspended for that?
I think he may have been up in front of the peoples.
Yeah, I think it's an accidentally on purpose, which some players...
Accidentally on purpose.
You know what I mean.
Yeah. And what I mean by that is the benefit of the doubt goes to Tom Lynch, the benefit of the doubt. Mm. I don't think the benefit of the doubt necessarily goes to Toby Green because of his history.
It was reckless.
But you have to take that out of consideration and just say it is what it is.
Marlon Pickett got a week.
Yep.
Is he unlucky?
No, I think he went past the ball and clipped him high. It was a standard textbook one that we're trying to take out of the game.
I'm okay with it.
But Dylan Moore continued to play, yeah?
Yeah, but,
that's not the point these days.
Yeah. But it knocked him over. He fell backwards.
Liam Ryan will get a couple.
Liam Ryan will get a couple. He's got a hamstring anyway, so they're in chaos over there. The Cade Chandler one's interesting, the tackle on Luke Foley. Knocked him out. I think he's in real trouble with this. I know that people think that it was all the one action. There was a real driving force into the turf. It was a face plant, Whitey. I know that it was both arms.
I don't think that's fair. I don't think it was a driving tackle by any stretch of the imagination.
Do you think he'll get off?
I think it's line ball, but I don't think it was a driving tackle. I think it was a situation where because the player who was tackled had zero awareness as to what was around him, he wasn't able to brace for contact. So he kind of just... I don't think he was driven into the ground.
It'll be a test for Chris, but when you come off concussed, and it looked a bad concussion, inevitably you're in trouble, I think, Half. It's all about the consequence.
Yeah.
If it's deemed a reportable offence.
Yep. But it was a face plant.
Yeah, he's come off concussed.
No, not necessarily. You can have contact that leads to concussion that is just incidental and accidental. Mm.
See, I don't think it was a slinging tackle. Well, certainly wasn't a slinging tackle. I don't think it was a driving tackle. I think it
was it his a dangerous momentum, tackle.
His momentum brought him forward, and as I said, the player, because he was just so unaware that he was about to be tackled, I think he contributed to it slightly.
Does he have an obligation to turn the player?
He does. Oh. He does release him. I'm just looking at it again. Mm. He does release him mid tackle. His right arm, which could have really been used to drill him, he does release it a little bit. It'd be interesting to see what Chris O does. Mm. I think there's some elements of that are out of his control.
And they're impossible to judge those.
And some that are in his control. Yeah, clearly the outcome is dramatic. And
yep.
And Luke Foley won't be there for a little while.
Yep. A couple of other quick ones. Half, of course, we revealed that Tim English was in hospital last week. There's every chance he misses again. That's how crook he was, of course. Pendlebury missed.
Influenza A?
Could be influenza C. It's that bad. Oh. It's not a good one.
Is that the worst one?
I'm not sure.
That's what I think.
I'll ask the doc.
That's what I think they're struggling with. Influenza A.
You know what? Right. I reckon he gets off.
Okay.
Yeah, I think so.
I hope he does.
He releases with his left arm too. Yeah. So he doesn't drive him in at all.
Yep.
So I agree with you. Mm. And so I'm saying is that because the West Coast player, had no idea he was about to be tackled, he's just like limp, you know, like limp.
How much interest did you have in that game yesterday when it was on?
A high amount of interest. I needed Clayton Oliver to get one more disposal.
Oh, yeah.
No.
I had it on. It is
what it is. I mean, it's top versus bottom.
I had it on, but I just found myself wandering.
But there's a lot of those games being played at the moment, Rama.
Stinker. I've got to go, guys. Time for the early mail. But the descent is an absolute farce. We'll talk about that. What about poor old McGovern? Shocking decision in the pocket. And then the most descent you can ever have. No 50. Absolute joke. We've got to do something about it.
I want you to
Jack
sort that out.
Jack Revolt showed descent to get a free kick, I reckon, in the first or second quarter of the Hawthorn-Richmond game.
For you, Adam, this is Liberace.
Zelton John?
This is Liberace at his finest. Real twinkle sort of finger sort of stuff. Brilliant stuff. Look at that. Feel it. Just feel the music. Thoughts and prayers to the family today. And now let's talk some footy because it's been a big weekend in round 9. There's been some storylines bubbling along. None bigger, of course, through the week than the GWS Giants and Leon Cameron parting ways after the game yesterday against the Blues, in which, of course, the Blues were victorious by 30 points in the end. Jimmy Bartel is a regular on the Monday Footy Review. He is up in Sydney after being a part of the shenanigans yesterday for Leon's farewell. He's been good enough to join us. Good morning, James.
Good morning, gentlemen. How are you?
We are well. How are you?
Yeah, not too bad. Just was part, as you said, part of the day and to celebrate Leon as a person and as a coach and what an incredible effort he's done with the Giants over 10 years.
Now, we'll get to the game and we'll talk about that sort of stuff, and there's a fair bit to talk about with you. We'll give you the morning off after a little bit of a chat here, Jim Bob, but were there some evening festivities to celebrate?
Yeah, punched a couple of pots after it.
What, Chinese food, pizza? What was the fare?
Oh, the fair. What do they describe it? Dude food was floating around the pub. We got pies and sausage rolls were floating around.
A little bit dude food. I've never heard of dude food.
Yeah.
But that makes sense. That makes sense. And in the aftermath, who was there? Was it all family and friends? Were it players? Who was involved?
Yeah, pretty much the entire list. It was there. There was staff. All of Leon's family was there. To celebrate what an incredible person he is. Look, if people who have had anything to do with Leon, the first thing they walk away from me is, like, they're caring, honest. He's got incredible values. And from a footy point of view, the guy just understands the game. He's very pragmatic. He knows what's going on. And I think that's what led to the conversation he had with Dave Matthews, which obviously resulted in what happened this week.
So, Jimmy, just the fact that it's all over... If you had to sort of summarise it in a couple of sentences as to why it's got to this point, how would you surmise it?
How, how did, like, this week you're talking about?
Well, the fact that Leon's no longer coach. How do we get to this point?
Well, I think it was just very balanced and very responsible from both sides. And as I touched on, I think it says a lot about Leon, but also where the footy club's at. I think it is unusual in our industry that both sides can amicably pass ways and, you know, actually take the time, take a bit of stock and actually really assess where the club's at, where the coach is at, and actually do it in a respectful manner. So we were trying to say what is. There was no rush from anyone, but Leon actually said that was in the best interest of the club. We were seeing how it was playing out, and because he deserved that respect for what he'd already done for the club leading up to that. And he made mention the next appointment is going to be for 3 years, because, you know, we're just going to keep extending Leon out for one more. And he understood where we'll go. He probably needed a fresh voice and a bit of a change-up.
Yeah, because I think that's fair, and I think that's why it's been received so well, how it's been done, because even watching the Giants yesterday, it's kind of emblematic of where they're at. You know, signs of goodness and then signs of frustration. Senior players aren't playing as well as they once were. Game style sort of floats in and out, and it's kind of like, you know what, it needs a change just based on what you saw yesterday.
Yeah, that's really fair, and I think that's what's happened throughout the entire process, both from Leon and from the club, is just being real about it, like actually, you know, putting the cards on the table, but it's keeping the lines of communication open, and that's why the club got pretty defensive when, you know, people were trying to add some angst into the situation, because it just wasn't there. It was the constant communication between Jace McCartney, the footy manager, Dave Matthews, Ian Leon, they'd talk a couple of times a week where it was about footy, but also, you know, other things going on, and also myself and the rest of the footy committees. It was constantly, what are we doing as far as the way we're trying to play? Who are we trying to play? So that's why there was a little bit of an annoyance from the club. We're saying, oh, this is going on. It's not. Everyone's completely on the same page.
Well, Jim, was there any suggestion to ask Leon to coach at least till the bye? Because Mark McVay comes in now. He's got 13 weeks. It's 13 games. Sorry, it's a long time. It's sort of get to the bye, maybe get some fresh air, then do it.
Yeah, I think we're going to have a discussion around the bye, because I think all clubs do. Nearly all clubs sit there and go, all right, how are we going? You chuck all the KPIs up. You see how we're playing, our style of footy, how it stacks up. But it was Leon and Dave having their weekly discussion. So, you know what? Let's do it now. Let's give Mark some free air, some time to put some stuff in place. It gives the club some distance and some air as well. So I think a lot of people do use the bye, Rama, as that real stop point. Now it's the interval where they can ever go, what's going on? But because we've been communicating so much, they arrived at that decision.
So what do you want to see from Mark McVay and this team? Do you want change, or do you want opportunity for players that perhaps have been missing out? What's the brief for Mark McVay the next 13 weeks?
Yeah, a lot of that half, but also you don't just go and throw people in who don't deserve a game. Who coined that term? Selection integrity?
Yes.
I'm not sure who said that one, but we've got some guys who are playing some pretty good footy in our VFL that they might be pushing up. Putting some pressure on. We'd love to see them, you know, take the game on like they did actually for a couple of quarters yesterday at Carlton, but they just couldn't sustain it.
So what happens next? What's your role in it all? Obviously, you're the footy director of the Giants, and we saw a lot of screen time, Jimmy screen time yesterday with Gil McLaughlin and all sorts of things yesterday. The real heavies.
Anyway, hey, Gil, move away. I know you're going to be on the camera. I'm just trying to enjoy a pie here.
So what happens now? Do you sit in a war room and put up 100 names on the whiteboard, or do you, because you've got time, there's no one else looking for a coach as it currently stands. What happens?
Yeah, we'll get to work this week, because we thought it was important to park all that, because you got to pay the respect to Leon. It was all about Leon this week, and you don't even think about those discussions. But this week, myself, Jace McCartney, Dave Matthews, we'll be having a good think of what we need for a coach. I think you look at what you got on your playing list, you look at even the personality type, look if you call certain sides have personality types, what do we need to either fit it or actually shake it up? So you've got to balance that up, and then how that actually all looks inside our footy department. So then once we get to the bottom of that, well, then some names will start emerging from that. Well, you know, we think this coach would like to interview because they can take us in this direction, or this coach would be able to have this sort of impression on the group. So I think we need to first identify what sort of personality or characteristics we need in the coach at the Giants, Whitey, and then we'll take it from there.
So could there be a situation where you could have a coach named by, say, round 15 or round 16 for next year because it is so early?
Not sure. Like, to be honest, like we'll sit down this week and get to work on what it looks like. I know I'm not giving you the answers you want, but we've just sort of really been this week all about Leon Cameron. So as this week unfolds, we'll be pretty clear on what we're trying to do.
There's probably only two guys that fall into that category. You could do ones
that are available. Yeah,
got the jobs currently wouldn't be announced by 15 or 16. But if you want to go to Ross or Clarko,
Ross said no yesterday.
He said no. Bucks has said no. So it may have Hurdy or Clarko.
What about Harford, two-time AFLW coach of the year?
Well, I'll talk about it, but it's going to cost you, Jim. It's going to cost you. But it goes to the question what you were saying before about personalities and traits that are required for the role. Do you have a leaning early as to what sort of person you need, someone to shake it up or someone to compliment it?
No, not yet. I'm not anchored to any position. I think that's where you fall into a bit of trouble. If you come into these sort of discussions already with an idea of what you want, I think you close off a bit of your thinking. So I'm not anchored to anyone particular or any type. I'm here to just have the discussions at the moment and we'll flesh it out.
But, Jim, are you anchored to a philosophy of what you think a good coach is?
I'm not anchored to it. I think I understand what style of football we need to play to be competitive and compete for premierships.
And what's that?
Well, it's a forward half game. It's forward half turnovers. It's scoring off turnovers. It's, you know, not getting caught in your back 50. It's rotations from mids and forwards. Because we know how damaging mids who are in the forward half of the game. It's a flexible back group that can, you know, mix up and down, whether on height. There's a lot of different things like that half that, you know, we often talk about actually in this forum where the four of us sit around and what we look to, why good sides keep playing really well, why Melbourne keeps playing really good footy, why Richmond keeps, you know, presenting as a challenger, the Lions. So but they all do very, very similar things, but in slightly different ways, depending on their personnel.
If Clarko said, I'll do it tomorrow, would you give him more than 3 years?
Would he? I don't know. Has he said, will he do it tomorrow?
No, he hasn't said that. It's a hypothetical. It's a hypothetical. But we're dealing with rare air in terms of coaching, and you said before it's a three-year deal. The next appointment's a three-year sort of contract. If it was someone like him, does it become a different story?
Oh, well, it's Clarko. We all know what a champion coach is. You'd be definitely having conversations. I'm being very careful there, even in joking context here, because we've had Jace McCartney have a joke and there's been an entire article written on it. So I'm just very mindful of even having a joke because context can be twisted here.
Now, you're really talking like a footy reader, which is good. You're doing a good job of it.
Real administrative. You're doing a very good job of it. Language.
I'm better than just our avocado toast stuff.
on Friday, I asked Dave Matthews about the situation with James Hurd as to whether he would come back and help Mark McVay more than what he's doing at the moment. And Dave said, well, you know, possibly. I believe he's in Europe at the moment. Hurdy on business.
You can do it by Zoom.
There's two parts to this.
FaceTime.
This is a serious conversation, gentlemen.
Sorry.
Do you expect that Hurdy will put up his hand to do a little bit more?
Yeah, I think he'll help, no doubt. He and Mark McVay, and you've got Rammer sitting there. He was part of that powerful Essendon side. They'll be all rolling the sleeves up. Everybody, even the other assistant coaches, myself, trying to be helping Jace McCartney and others there as well, because you're one very, very good man down as far as football IQ goes. And so, everyone, pretty much everyone in the footy department's right. Let's roll the sleeves up and take this challenge on.
So, Jim, with that, so I think Spike was coaching the defenders as it stood. Who does somebody else take that role now?
No, Jennings was coaching the defenders. Spike had elevated himself this year.
He's mid.
The senior assistant,
yes.
And mids, yeah. So he'll probably still do a fair chunk of that. Obviously, we've got Amon Buchanan, Steve Johnson, and Jennings. They're all joining together and hopefully getting us some more wins in the back half of the year. Mm.
What'd you make yesterday's performance, Jim? Three-quarter time. It's
Hang on. Go back to the start of that game. I think Carlton had. It was 15 inside 50 to zero.
It was. They start that halfway. Game. It's half-court basketball.
Well, I know that, but he's going to run out of time soon. I don't want to get to the point.
You sort of go straight to the end.
Well, I got to go straight to the end because he's running out of time. Okay. Three-quarter time, you're down by a goal. Leon's last game. And it's 1-3 to 5-3 in the end. What was the sort of feedback from the coaching director or the GWS footy director?
Oh, I think it was symptomatic of how we played our footy in the last 18 months, really. It was in and out. From quarter to quarter, even 10-minute patches. I actually think it said a lot about Carlton. I was so impressed with them. They showed a different way to win with their smaller players, their pressure. That was pure work rate from a lot of them, and it's probably some stuff we need to learn, because you ask from a Giants point of view. Like, it's so awesome to watch Sam Walsh live. Like, if you just put the old-school ISO cam on him, you just watch him. He doesn't stop moving. He just keeps going contest to contest, but he's better than that. He goes from contest to contest, but his positioning is first class. He's in the eyes of the receiver. If he's not winning the ball, he's now hitting front and squares. And he just ripped us apart early. And then the rest of the Carlton Smalls did a fantastic job. They knew when to present up and when to then turn around and hit front and square. So really impressive from Carlton, but they're lessons that we need to learn as a group. How you move the ball from your back half. Saad was really good coming out of the back half for them. And again, I think we spoke about him last week. Jack Silvani is so important to them. There were a couple of times where he just hit up the ball and it wasn't really a sexy play, but he was that release kick which just took all the pressure off Carlton.
So, Jim, Carlton are 7-2 at the moment, firmly entrenched inside the top four, game inside the top four. Does their style look like it's going to stack up and hold up?
I think it will. It'll just come down to maturity and experience. So the Giants had a 4 or 5 minute patch where they kicked a few on them, and that's just the next learning for them. I think we've spoken about this, is how do you play a bit of fast possession? You don't get scored against when the opposition's got momentum. That's the next step for them. Okay, identify it. You know what? They're probably winning a bit around the contest. Do we bring an extra one up or we drop one back? Just some tools, just little tools they can just add to their game. For when the opposition, they've got us for a little bit. How can we slow it down so we don't get scored against? The really good side, and the opposition's going well, still find a way to just not get scored against until they start to win the footy back, and then they're back into their groove.
Jim Bob, plenty happening at your footy club. We appreciate your time today after a busy night last night with the dude food at the pub. Look forward to seeing you in the studio next week. I'm sure there'll be plenty of things to discuss from a Giants perspective. Thank you for your time, mate.
Sure.
Bring some of that dude food in next Monday morning.
7:25, that is Jimmy Bartel up there in Sydney after the send-off to Leon Cameron yesterday. They were not good enough for the Blues. 30 points was the margin in the end off the SMS. Picked up early doors. Gutsy win by the Blues. Lots of excuses. Would have lost that game in past years. 7-2 is giddy up, says Tommy and Ash Burton. I think that's probably a fair assessment of that performance.
Yeah, absolutely. It looked like it was unravelling for them. The way that the Giants got themselves back into the game, and they found a way. And I'm big on this, Rammer, is that the clubs that or the teams that are able to change the fortune of a game within a game back onto their terms, and not just let it sort of unravel and fall away. And that's what Carlton was able to do. And that to me is maturity. It's leadership out on the field. It was very impressive.
The perfect
complete.
The perfect world. You double it. It's 14-4 at round 18 with a month of football to go.
Harford and White. It's RSN 927's Breakfast Club.
It is. It's nice to have your company. Whatever you're doing on this Monday morning after the big sporting weekend, we hope you're enjoying the program. Till 8:30, we'll hand over to Michael Felgate when Racing Pulse kicks off, as it always does around about that time on the weekdays around here on RSN 927. The Verdict Boys, always great listening on a Monday as well. So listen to that. Gareth Hall from 10:30 on RSN Central. Plenty of action still coming your way. Whitey, you were talking to us about the ladder. No, yeah, you were. Top four in the top eight before the break. What did you need to say about all that?
Sorry, I thought Steve had stolen my paper. I think we've got separation now. I do think even though Collingwood and Gold Coast have got 16 points along with the Bulldogs and Port Adelaide.
Gold Coast got a good draw.
Yeah.
And Metricon.
I do think it's a top 10. And
so good for them.
The Bulldogs and Port Adelaide, who finished last year inside the top four at the end of the final series, if they were to go in, who would they replace? Or do they go in? That's the first question. And the second question is...
Port Adelaide won't go in.
You don't, you're not a rat for Port.
No, that's what I'm saying.
No, that's why you're saying they're not going to go in.
It's pretty straightforward.
Yeah. Okay, so all right, so we'll say Port can't go in.
Port can't go in.
So do you think the Bulldogs can go in?
Well, yeah, no, because you've been all over them.
No, but I jumped off.
Yeah, you did jump off.
I did jump off.
Where's the form ladder? That's due now.
That's a good question.
That is really
it's a 10-week thing. We need 10 weeks of sample size.
Needs the buy.
So for next week. The 10 weeks. Richmond will probably make the 8. I think the 8's probably almost set. There you go.
Well, that's what I'm alluding to, is it?
Well, I mean, the dogs and the power, and I still think the Suns are more relevant than Collingwood, who are all on 4 and 5, all those teams. I think the Suns will be more relevant than the Magpies. So if you want to play 10, I'm playing 11, yeah, if you want to do that. But I sort of think that we might see the 8 as it currently sits.
Plus the Bombers a chance.
The Bombers are no chance. That'd
so what do you reckon, Rammer?
Maybe one change. Richmond is still the one that they should make it because I think their best football is really good. I think it's really, really good. But they have patches. Like they got out to 35 points, I reckon, in the last quarter against Hawthorn, and then Hawthorn, they scared them late. They got back within 10. So there's parts of Richmond's game that I really, really like. There's other parts that you... So I think they're the vulnerable one.
So, and they've won 3 in a row, and they've got Essendon this week.
Geelong have got a few games coming up at Cadinia Park.
Yeah.
The next little bit. So they'll sort of get to, they'll be... Maybe 10 and 5, I reckon.
They've been very inconsistent. The Cats win loss last 6 weeks.
So yeah, they have. And then the top four currently is Melbourne, Brisbane, Fremantle, and Carlton. I think it's pretty clear Melbourne and Brisbane are the best two. Who are the next best two?
I didn't love Fremantle's game yesterday.
Well, nobody did.
Well, they only kicked 4 goals. So I don't think
except for the Gold Coast, they love Fremantle's game. It was a great win by the Suns.
So Fremantle.
This is what I'm saying about Gold Coast. Got Metricon Stadium is going to be difficult to win at. And they play it really well. They played really well against Melbourne there early in the season. We know how good the D's are. So I think the fact that they've got a pretty friendly draw compared to because of where they finished last season, the weighting is in their favour if they're a half-decent team. Well, I think they've done a pretty good job so far, and they've got a lot more games at Metricon coming up, and it's going to be tough. I reckon they'll get close to 11, 12 wins.
Just Fremantle, 65 inside 50s yesterday for 4 goals, 9.
They tried to play dry weather football.
Yeah, that's what.
No, yeah.
I know you like Fremantle.
No, I do. But what they did yesterday was what they did against St Kilda. Is that they just get themselves in this kind of zone where they can't score and they can't move the ball. They get paralysed, and against better teams, that's going to be their problem.
So you talk about the dry weather football. So they had more possessions than Gold Coast yesterday, but lost the contested football count comfortably.
But they started quite well, and then the wetter weather came because it was a bit slippery to start with, and they never looked likely. I just think it's interesting because I think it's great after 9 rounds. You look at it, and there are two teams that have clearly separated themselves from everybody else. But after that, you go, I'm actually not sure who's going to finish in the top four, and I'm actually not sure who's going to finish in the top 8. And I don't know the answer to this, but it would be very rare for there to be 10 teams in the competition after 9 rounds that have a percentage of over 108, which is the case with the top 10. So there's a lot of haves and have-nots at the moment.
I think that's the point, isn't it? There's a great discrepancy between the good and the bad. Yeah.
Well, West Coast percentage is the same percentage that Fitzroy was in 1996.
Well, that top four conversation you're talking about...
They're going...
That top four conversation you talk about, Friday night becomes really important. Carlton, Sydney.
Mm.
My word, it does.
Well, it's 4 versus 5, but if Sydney wins, they go equal with Carlton on points. Obviously, if Carlton wins, they go 2 points clear, 2 games clear.
8-pointer.
That's the old tiebreaker. That's the old 8-pointer. Adam White tiebreaker. I want to talk about the Saints.
Yeah.
Because you referenced something before the break, Whitey, about Carlton being able to change the course of the game mid-game and not just accept what was happening. They find another way. They did that. The Saints did that on the weekend, on Saturday night against the Cats. At the quarter time, it looked as though, the way it was unfolding, that if there wasn't significant change from the Saints and the coaching staff, they were going to get wiped off the park. It would have been an 8-10 goal win to Geelong in a really professional manner. But credit to them. They got the game back on terms in that second quarter. Now, the scoreboard didn't necessarily reflect it. They still were down by, 3 points or so at half-time. But that third quarter was nothing short of scintillating. They got it back on terms. Geelong had 52 handball receives in that first quarter, just allowed to do whatever they liked. They had 30 marks as well, coming off 141 last week. And they were able to just penetrate and slice and dice their way through the middle of the ground by foot.
Well, they had 230 disposals in the first half.
They did. And they had 104. What did they have? Second half, they had 144. So they took the game off them. It was the third quarter which really impressed me. They were plus 7 in clearance, 16-9. But they made it a bit more of a clearance game and were able to dominate that. They were plus 14 in contested possession, 44-30. Plus 11 inside 50, 20-9. After being smacked in the second term. Handball receives, they had 62, so they ran and took the game on, and Geelong only had 31. And uncontested possession, they had 36 more. As a result, they got 5 goals from stoppage and kicked 7 goals for the quarter to break the game open and make
seven
it impossible.
7 goals, 4.
7 goals, 4 for the quarter.
Well, they actually played their game.
They were awesome, but to be able to flip it, like Geelong had control that game. First quarter, you think, oh, no, this is just going to be another bad night. Geelong will win this. But as the game grew, it's quarter time, they reset a few things structurally and focused on the contest a bit more, which got the game back on terms a bit. And then the third quarter, they just exploded. They were fantastic.
So we talk about who is St Kilda's most important player, and we mentioned Paddy Ryder or Rowan Marshall before 7 o'clock. I'm going to throw another player into the mix, a lot based on what you've just said, and that's Jay Gresham. Because Gresham had 12 disposals in the third quarter, but what he does is he runs at the opposition and he creates movement, because if he's running with the ball, that means others have to move with him. And with the way Geelong plays, they don't like players like Jay Gresham, because he runs, he changes angles, he goes from one side to the other, he darts around, he's unpredictable. As I say, he's unpredictable. Geelong likes it predictable.
Yeah.
And you've got to be brave and you've got to have speed to do that. So when you throw in Zach Jones, who does similar things, Zach tends to try too much at times. But at least he tries things.
Yep.
And that unpredictability helps St Kilda get back into the match. And they're two players. I mean, obviously, Jade hardly played at all last year, and Zach's been in and out through injury. They're very important to what they do, because one criticism with St Kilda is that they're a bit ploddish with the likes of Steele and Crouch and Ross. These are the difference that help make them a top 8 team.
Well, you know what they did, Rama? They said to Tom Stewart, we'd like someone to play on you. And we'd like you to have to play on someone.
He still had 27.
Well, he did. A lot of that was in junk in the first half and in the back end of the quarters. But he was able to do what he liked in the first half. In the first quarter in particular, he was the difference in the game. He was the one that was setting the whole thing up. And was just allowed to play that role that he plays so magnificently. He's the best at it, I reckon, in the comp.
It's interesting.
But then St Kilda said, you know what? That's not working for us. Can you just go and sit in front of someone?
It's interesting. When the game is predictable, Geelong always looks like they control it against any opposition. Soon as a team brings speed, and that's what we spoke about Friday, about St Kilda needing to, being at Marvel Stadium, bring speed. Second half, they bring speed. And Geelong, they couldn't counter it. They had no way to counter it. So I think that's Geelong's challenge. So Geelong, when game on their terms. They look great. They look fantastic. But I think still the adjustments that Geelong are making to this slightly new style that they're playing half,
yeah,
which I like. I'm not concerned because I said this on Friday. I said this game's more about St Kilda. Like, it's Melbourne Geelong in the 2 weeks. Melbourne, they fail, but they play better in the sort of third quarter. Geelong, now they pass the test. So I think with the Cats, they are tinkering. What are they? They're 5-4 or whatever they are at the moment, the Cats. But they've got games coming up at Caninia Park. They'll be fine. But this is more about, I think, some validation for St Kilda and what they've been able to do in the first 9 weeks.
Yep. Wilkie did a good job on Cameron. Even Howard.
I love the Deconing King matchup.
Yeah, that was terrific.
That was fun.
Two great kids going at it.
Yeah.
Really good fun to watch. And McKenzie did a great job. Some of their lesser lights. Wilkie.
Paddy Ryder's last quarter. Just those two contested marks inside forward 50.
There's someone else I failed to mention in that run and gun is Jack Sinclair and the improvement that he's made as a
footballer. Oh, he's off the charts.
So he's another one that, again, runs at the opposition.
So
makes it hard to set up behind.
So Jack Steele's out for 2 months. Hunter Clark's played a couple in the reserves now. Is it just simply he comes in, Steele goes out? I know they're different players. So that's going to have now a bigger reliance upon Brad Crouch, probably Seb Ross.
Who is very good.
Seb Ross will have to do a little bit more.
Seb Ross is someone that had dropped off the last couple of years. And a lot of that was just through his role changing. He probably goes back and plays a more pivotal role in that midfield mix.
Yeah. So I think if it's 8 games that Steele misses, I think if St Kilda can be sort of, 4-4 without him, I think they've done a pretty good job.
They've got a pretty favourable draw. We talked about this with St Kilda last week. If they were to win this one, it really sets up their season. Because if they didn't, they kind of go back to the pack a bit. And that Adelaide game next week, I mean, you never really know with Adelaide. Because they've scared the life out of Brisbane in the first half last week.
They did.
But now they've got that buffer, which is really, really important for them.
We'll get to a break, 19-8. The Saints are marching. That's what we know. Cats will be fine. They'll be disappointed with their output.
First win against Geelong since 2016, I believe it was, for the Saints.